Hello and welcome to the Bingeables Podcast, a podcast for geeky TV junkies where we watch TV shows you just have to binge on. We're your hosts, Chinlin
and Isaac.
We're back to talk about the superhero animated series Invincible on Amazon Prime Video.
I should let you know there's going to be spoilers.
Lots and lots of spoilers. So that's your one and only fair warning, guys. We're going to dive right into it.
Yeah, because we're doing the whole season.
The whole thing.
I'm not just going to talk about episode one and be like, oh, what's going to happen? We are going to talk about what we thought, though, about what was going to happen. Because that, I think that's a lot of the good part of this show is that as the show progressed, you sort of update your own theory as to what's going on.
I had so many theories and none of them were what I thought.
I was pretty close.
Like, you kept asking me, so what do you think? And I would tell you, okay, so my theory on this is blah 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 blah.
Yeah, I was pretty close, but still not right.
Can we start with Robot first? Because that's...
Sure.
I remember a theory I had with Robot. This is more recent because, like, I just finished watching the show yesterday. So, Robot, when he is kind of... When it looks like he was, like, being a double agent for Cecil with, like, letting the Mahler twins out. And then he was like, here, I need you to, like, clone this thing for me. So, you remember how my theory was... I thought... Robot, because he liked Monster Girl. I thought his motivation for having the Mahler twins out was that he wanted to somehow save Monster Girl by having the Mahler twins like create a clone of herself, because she was in the hospital after the what attack was it?
Oh, that was when they fought.
They fought
the machine.
The machine, yeah, and the lion guy, voiced by Michael Dorn.
Oh yeah, who looks way cooler in the comics. But
yeah. So
I think yeah,
they were all of the new Guardians of the Globe. Like, they were all pretty fucked up, having to recover in the hospital. Monster Girl was the last one. He likes her. So my theory was he's cloning her so that in case the original Monster Girl dies, her memories are transferred to the clone version. Obviously, that is not what happened, but I liked my original theory because it, I guess I'm a little bit more romantic. I like kind of those big gestures.
Yeah, the reason why when you told me that, I was like, no, that can't be right, was because, well, not just because I already knew what happened, but because I was like, well, he started letting the Mahler twins out before she even joined the team. Right? Or at least, but even if it may have been right after she joined the team, but it was certainly before he learned about, like, her curse, I think. So, yeah. But it's not a bad idea, because I think, you know, it certainly seems like something he would do.
Because Robot isn't actually a robot. He is a person.
He's a person. He's been using robots as a proxy.
Yeah, which is pretty dope. But yeah, he, it turns out that was one of the big reveals for Robot in the season one, episodes, that he is actually not a robot. He's a person who has manufactured a ton of, superhero like robots.
And, you know, they actually kept, hinting at it throughout the series, which I didn't really notice the first time through. I just thought, you know, you sort of accept the premise that he is a robot, right? Because this is a superhero universe, and so there there can be an artificial intelligence that is, that's in a mechanical body. But they kept talking about, like, things he could or couldn't do as a robot, and then he would they'd be like, you can't have emotions, robot. You're just a robot. And I kept thinking back to like Data, like, well, that's not necessarily true. Like, you can have programmed emotions or, develop them.
AI can, be so sophisticated and advanced that they become human-like.
Right. But what, I didn't expect was that, the sort of the reason for these, sort of inconsistencies with the perfect calculation or whatever is that, he is, in fact, an organic being and is just controlling these robots.
And I guess this is a good segue to the Mahler twins, because they're the first villain we see. And they're not the big bad. And I like that they're not the big bad, because the best part about dissecting villains is that they're not always the evil genius.
Well, going back to the Mahler twins.
There's human aspects to them. You don't know which twin is the original or the clone, and then they're always having these jabs at each other. It's like, well, no, you're the clone, no, you're the clone, and it's like they're brothers fighting.
Well, so going back to the Mahler twins, this takes us back to episode one, and I want to talk about episode one a lot, actually, because
we're gonna get to that ending. We will.
Not the ending. I want to talk about the whole episode, because the
the
way that it's set up, right? Like, you are first, introduced to just some, security guards just shooting the shit at the entrance to the White House, and they're just sort of waving people on or whatever, and the people actually seem to be sort of annoyed that the guards aren't really paying attention. And then the Mahler twins show up, and, they're so powerful that, the guards there at the gate are not going to do anything. And then the Guardians of the Globe show up and start evacuating people. And they're really good at teamwork, and they understand, how to work together, and they're all willing to take orders from each other. And you can easily see, the different parallels to the Justice League that a lot of the characters are modeled off of. There's Darkwing that is a analog to Batman, and there's the Red Rush, who's the Flash.
War Woman is obviously Wonder Woman.
And then there's
who's the Immortal supposed to be?
That I'm not sure. He actually seems to be more of like a mix between like a sort of a Superman character and a Wolverine, but not quite. I'm not 100% sure who he's supposed to be exactly modeled after, or if he has a specific one, but there's also Martian Man, who's modeled after the Green Martian, and then the
fish guy is supposed to be Aquaman.
Right, obviously. And then the woman that uses that green stone to phase through stuff, it's kind of like Green Lantern in using the stone, but it's sort of like
in power, she's got Shadow Cat's power from X-Men.
And I think that's actually a power from the Martian of DC Comics, being able to phase through stuff. Not 100% sure on this stuff, guys. Sorry, I am not as big of a comic book nerd as I guess I could be. But they set, you see them working together, and then Omni-Man shows up, and he's very much like Superman. He's got this two-tone colored cape. He flies around. He's got the same posture as a lot of the iconic Superman poses and stuff. So you can see that he's not necessarily working with the Guardians of the Globe, but he's definitely not working against them. He's there and he's helping, but he's not part of the team, it doesn't seem. Because he doesn't show up immediately like the others do. And so I think that's a great sort of establishing, like, okay, here's the universe we're in, right? And if you're at least mildly familiar with the Justice League, you're like, okay, I get the premise here, right? This is, we've got this team of superheroes and they, you know, save the day and fight bad guys. Got it. Then you get introduced to Mark Grayson, and he's the son of Omni-Man. It's like, oh, okay, so what we're going to be following is this coming-of-age story of Mark Grayson, and he's going to get introduced to the Guardians of the Globe, but he's probably not good enough to join them, so he'll be on some, you know, minor team or something at first. And that's, like, that's how you see everything being set up, and you sort of, or at least I did. That's what I expected the show to be. And then at the end of the episode, where all of you get all these tiny little vignettes of what's going on with each individual Guardian of the Globe, what their, you know, sort of day-to-day life might be, and then, you know, or what they just happen to be doing at the time when they get this distress signal. And then that distress signal, you know, summons them back to the Guardians of the Globe headquarters, wherein they meet Omni-Man, and then this is obviously where the whole series really kicks off. Like,
yeah,
you feel like you've just been introduced to all these characters, and now you understand their secret identities or what it is they do outside of the team, and so now you've got a good feel for what's going to be going on for the rest of this show.
And then the
creators just, like, throw all that hard work away, and Omni-Man just slaughters them all. Obviously, like, Darkwing does not stand a chance. Like, he is just a human. He, like, I saw a comment on Reddit that was like, Darkwing in the comics, Batman without ears. Darkwing in the TV show, Batman without organs.
Like, oh god, you showed me that. Oh my god, yeah. I would say the ending of the pilot pretty much sets you up for the rest of the season for the B plot. The B storyline is that mystery of what the fuck is going on with Omni-Man. Why did he kill his what we thought were his friends, but actually weren't?
Right. So, you know, during the episode, and this is the great part, right? The writers want to give you some misdirection, right? And so they have, I forget, it was either War Woman or Immortal. One of them says to the other, like, this isn't Omni-Man. Like, he wouldn't do this. He must be being controlled, because they've known him for, you know, decades at this point, and he's always been, while reluctantly helping them, he's never done anything to be, you know, merciless and kill people, right?
Yeah, so that, them saying that, that led to my theory of, okay, what if he is controlled by a right. villain who wants to take down the Guardians?
So the writers planted that seed so mm-hmm. that you would think, like, oh yeah, that, okay, his character is that. So you're going to think, as a viewer, this is not in character for this person. So they're being controlled or something else is happening. Like, so, and then, of course, I still can't remember. The other one then replies, well, it doesn't matter, because right now it's him or us, and I choose us. But so, you know, my thoughts at the time was like, okay, well, he could be being controlled, or it could be like a clone. 'Cause, you know, I'm thinking,
we were introduced to the Mahler twins, who obviously cloned.
They have, you know,
they yeah. know they have cloning technology right. and expertise. So the other theory could have been, maybe this wasn't the original Omni-Man. Maybe the Mahler twins somehow grew cloned him.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
Was your theory.
And my sort of other, like, my other evidence for that, not just that the Mahler twins, you know, one, they were accusing each other of being clones, but also that in the boys, there's a clone of Homelander in the comics.
Okay.
So that, you know, and so I was thinking that it was probably a clone of Omni-Man set up to set some other events in motion.
Mm-hmm.
So that there was some mastermind that was like, okay, so I've got a clone of Omni-Man and I'm going to destroy the Guardians of the Globe. And then, you know, that's going to set my plans in motion. Obviously, also not what happened. But that's what I was thinking at the end of the first episode.
Yeah, I was just like, the fuck?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that if the first half of episode one didn't hook you in, the second half definitely did.
So, you know, and they give you a little bit of sort of what to expect from Omni-Man when Mark tells them that he's got his powers. Because no one is sort of fairly happy up until that point. And when Mark is like, hey, I finally got my powers, he's like, you know, through the rewatch, you can see it on his face. He's like, oh, fuck, or shit, right? Omni-Man seems to then steel himself against the, like, what we now know is what he has to do, but at the time, I thought, huh, he doesn't seem to be very happy that his son got powers, and I wonder why that is. And this is, of course, before he slaughters the Guardians of the Globe, so, you know, I don't think back on it like that it's Omni-Man. Now, by the end of the second episode, I am actually at that point, because they've had the demon detective show up.
Damien Darkblood.
Damien Darkblood. By the end of that episode, I'm fairly certain that Omni-Man did it. And it wasn't a clone, and he wasn't being controlled. But based on the language that he was using with his son, like, there are responsibilities that we have, and there are things that you don't know about and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, like, as the viewer, you just think, oh, this is typical superhero stuff that he's trying to teach Mark, but
what? Some of it, but what I was picking up, and this turned out to be, again, a wrong theory, but I was picking up that he was on the planet, and he was supposed to destroy it. But he wasn't supposed to tell anyone, and the wasn't supposed to tell anyone was backed up by something. And so that if he actually told someone, and instead of just hinting at it, very bad things would happen. So I thought his goal was to try and get Mark to realize that Omni-Man was there to destroy the planet, and that Mark was there to, you know, try and help him stop that from happening without telling Mark, because telling Mark would be, I don't know, would summon the people or something. Like, he was under maybe some mind control chip or something that he was trying to work around. Obviously, that was wrong. I thought that would have been cool, but again, wrong. He was just there to fuck the planet up.
Also, I liked that Omni-Man is a superhero, but at the same time, he's not. He's both a superhero and a villain, if you're thinking of that in, like, the binary sense. But he's complex, and I love that.
Because he's been saving people, right? Yeah. Like, it's not like he's been throwing fights or anything.
And he's not, when it's revealed that he's, you know, here to enslave and destroy, he wasn't acting the whole time that he's, you know, been married and had his kid. Like, he has genuinely learned a lot about humans and humanity. And obviously he cares about his son. And it kind of sucked that he didn't care that much about his wife. But
yeah.
But the point is that he's not this villain that was just acting the whole time. Like, he had genuine feelings about the people around him.
And, you know, this may get revealed later, but one of my questions is kind of like, well, why did he wait so long? And what was his plan if Mark didn't get any powers? Is it?
Oh, I was upset by that.
So
when Mark finds out, it's like when he told Mark, and Mark is like upset. And I'm just thinking the whole time, that final episode, why are you upset about your son being upset with you that you are a serial murderer?
Yeah, so here's what I'm thinking has gone on in Omni-Man's head is that until Mark gets his powers, he's like, I can just sort of hang out on this planet and have this family and do what I want. And then once they're dead, I can go ahead and take over the planet like I'm supposed to. And no one's going to be the wiser because I'm the only one here, and he's, you know, not sending back reports or anything. Like, he's just supposed, you know, I guess the idea is he's just supposed to take it over, and like when it's ready, he sends them a signal, and then the Viltrumites show up and do their thing. So then, like, so long as Mark doesn't get his powers, right? He can keep up this charade. He can just keep doing this. But as soon as Mark gets his powers, he's like, well, fuck. If they find out that I have a son with powers, they're going to be like, why did it take you so long? What were you doing there, right? So once Mark has his powers, he's like, well, all right, looks like we're going to have to do this. And so I think he really sort of set a switch, right? Like, I can just, you know, start disregarding all these people, right? It's kind of like when in a lot of other stories where someone starts treating someone really shittily to get that other person to leave, even though it hurts both of them. They're going to be like, no, I never liked you anyway. Fuck off, right? Even though they clearly did like the person. And
that trope is, that thing is used a lot.
So yeah. I think that's what he was doing. He just wasn't so he wasn't overt about it.
Yeah.
So then I think that's why, like, he suddenly changed. The other thing is that alien race that invaded the planet, right? That he went through the portal and then destroyed. I think that during that time, like, he was like, okay, well, there are other people trying to take over this planet now, and that means that I have to go ahead and do it. Otherwise, it's going to be tough.
Holy shit, you're right. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
The aliens who came to try to invade.
So
yeah, that was like episode two. Oh yeah. My god.
That speeds up his timetable, mm-hmm. right? So he's like, well, fuck.
And gives him more justification right. for this switch.
Yep. And so and it's not like the hours that it is on Earth, right? It's, you know, years.
Oh yeah. He aged a lot. Just in the few hours that he was at the alien world yeah. where he fought off all those aliens. Yeah. Right.
So it's certainly like feasible for him to have like worked through all his, you know, crying or whatever about having to kill his wife and those things, or, you know, having to do what he's got to do to Earth. Even if he cares, he's like, okay, I'm done with them. Right. And he can get out all of his aggression and anger about it on these people that were trying to take over Earth. And so when he returns, he can be a lot more ambivalent about human life.
Can we talk about Omni-Man for a second? Just like him as a Viltrumite and what we learn about Viltrumites
sure.
at the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
They're essentially, what's the word? Elitists? They, thousands of years ago, Viltrumites, like, they fought each other to only have the best, the strongest, come out on top.
Right.
And then they instilled that mentality into future generations that included Omni-Man. And so he is operating on that mentality. Well, humans are below us.
Mm-hmm.
So he's basically justifying genocide.
Yeah, because, you know, to him...
Which is why, you know, Mark is against that, obviously.
Right.
He grew up as human. His friends, his mother, they're all human. And, like I don't know. Omni-Man is such a good character to dissect. Oh, my God.
Like, I mean, you brought this up when they were fighting in that final episode. Like, why is he surprised, though? Like,
yeah.
He raised him.
He raised him human.
Yeah. And, you know, you did tell him when he was, an adolescent, like when he was 12 or something, maybe 11 or 12, like, hey, you're at least half Viltrumite, but... he's still grown up on Earth, and like all the things that he's seen you do, especially like on the news and stuff, that's always been about saving people, about doing the right thing, about, you know, treating people right. So it's very strange that you would expect him to be like, okay, so I guess Dad, you and I are Viltrumites. Yeah, let's go fuck this whole planet. Like, it's weird that you would expect that out of your son, just based on the way that you raised him. And, you know, I actually just misspoke earlier. Omni-Man and Invincible were not fighting. Omni-Man was slaughtering Invincible. Like, that was not a fight. That was, I think... In the rewatch, I noticed that Invincible either did not land a single hit or only landed a single hit. I can't remember. But, it would be ridiculous to think that somebody that has just gotten their powers would be able to beat one of the very best officers that the Viltrumites has to offer, right? Omni-Man has been training for centuries, probably. There's absolutely no way that Mark could put up a real fight against him if Omni-Man was committed. And for parts of the fight, it seems like Omni-Man is committed, but not completely. Because he's not trying to kill Mark. He's trying to get Mark to submit to the idea that Earth is sort of forfeit no matter what happens. Because... Mark's not going to be able to stop Omni-Man, so he might as well just come along and do the things that Omni-Man wants.
And, like, because of the reveal at the end, we don't know that much about Viltrumites still, which is, you know, something I'm sure they're going to bring up in season two. Like, he's gone almost 2 decades without sending them a report. So, like, I feel like if I was Omni-Man's boss back in Viltrumite, is that
Viltrum.
The name? Viltrum, sorry. If I was Omni-Man's boss back in the planet Viltrum, I'd be like, what's taking this dude so long? Why aren't you communicating with me?
I don't know that he would necessarily, or that Omni-Man's boss would actually think that. Because if you look at the guy that Seth Rogen played,
I think they just called him Alien.
Okay. The guy that showed up and was like, I was supposed to be testing Urath. This isn't Urath. That guy is pretty powerful, right? And imagine if you had a planet full of his species, right?
Uh-huh.
One Omni-Man might take quite a while to, you know, get that species and that planet to... be subjugated. The people that sent Omni-Man to Earth don't know anything about Earth. They just know that it's a planet, right? So they don't know what he's run into. He might have, you know, found a planet full of people that are similar to Viltrumites, and like it's taking a long time. So I think it's at least plausible that they are unaware of what's going on the planet, and it's not like the planet was, you know, completely undefended. You had the original Guardians of the Globe, and especially Immortal, who's a character I definitely want to know more about.
I guess we're going to learn about him in flashbacks because he's dead again.
He's not really dead. So in the last episode...
Oh, right. They were trying to revive him again.
They had put him back
Cecil.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cecil's team.
Oh, that was another thing that I was expecting. I was expecting that Cecil was the mastermind that had gotten the clone of Omni-Man and was trying to manipulate circumstances so that Invincible would come under his employ.
That was your theory?
Yeah, because every time he would ask Omni-Man something to do something, Invincible would end up doing it. And I thought that Cecil had orchestrated the destruction of the Guardians of the Globe to begin with. And because of the way he was drawn, obviously, I could see him being a secret evil guy. Right? And I was like, well, that's a little on the nose, but, you know, I mean, Omni-Man's like a little on the nose for a goody two shoes Superman, so it's fine. I bet that guy's got some secret plot going on to try and manipulate things to his advantage, which he sort of did, but only because he knew sort of very early on that Omni-Man had killed the Guardians of the Globe and was just trying to figure out why. Like, he knew before the audience did. Because when Darkblood? Damien Darkblood?
Yeah, yeah.
When he first was like, yeah, seems like there was only the seven of them and only one lived, kind of can only draw one conclusion from that. Cecil was immediately like, don't you ever say that out loud in public ever again, or I will fucking end you. Seems to me, at the time, the writers were trying to trick the audience into thinking that...
Cecil had a lot of faith in Omni-Van's story?
No, more that he didn't want the truth getting out. And he didn't want the truth getting out because it was him that was controlling Omni-Man, or him that created the clone of Omni-Man, whatever it was. Now,
oh, right. Sorry, we're back to your theory.
Yeah.
We're going back and forth, so now, okay.
Sorry.
That was your theory originally about Omni-Man, why you thought he killed his friends.
Right.
Yeah, okay, right. Okay. I forgot what we were talking about. Viltrum.
Oh, you wanted to know more about Viltrum. I want to know more about Immortal.
Oh, Immortal. Right. Because he is... They were in the middle of fixing him up again.
Yeah.
Because he was torn in half. So I guess, you know, he still has completed body parts that can be put together.
Yeah. Instead of decapitated, this time he was torn in half.
Yeah, so he could be put back together.
Put him back together. Now the question is...
Is it actually going to work? And is he going to be more like a robot zombie, like frat boys?
Well, here's what I was thinking, actually. Imagine an immortal that was souped up like those zombies. No, I was thinking that maybe they have to get the Mahler twins out. Because they're the ones that were able to revive him the first time, right?
I would like it if the Mahler twins were used again in that capacity. But I don't know. I guess from a writing standpoint, like, you're just writing the same thing again. They let him out. They got to use him for something. Like, I would kind of like it if they stayed in prison for a little bit longer. And they only came to visit him and ask for advice rather than him doing something.
So I think that the way they would use the twins this time would be the twins would be like reluctant participants, sort of like made to do it. I don't know. We'll have to see how that all plays out, but.
We saw some flashbacks of the Immortal. Like, he's been around definitely the earliest flashback we got was, I think, when the time of Abraham Lincoln's shooting.
Oh, earlier than that. Yeah, there was definitely some portion where he was in, like, the Middle Ages, like, medieval Scotland or something.
Okay. The flashbacks were really fast, so I must have missed it or forgot about it. But, yeah, I agree. I think learning more about the Immortal would be really good for season two, because he's literally the only former Guardian who we can get more information out of.
And he's the, like, I mean, he's the only one that's seemingly able to land a hit on Omni-Man. So if any Viltrumites show up, like, he's, like, Invincible's, you know, didn't die, but
he got pretty fucked up.
He also, like, didn't do any damage, so it's not like he could stop any Viltrumites that show up.
Currently, Mark is still too much of a noob to be able to do any damage.
Yeah.
On a Viltrumite.
Yeah, so I don't know, man. Now, okay, we haven't talked about things that we don't like yet.
No, that's okay. I thought of something and I forgot.
Okay.
This is what happens when I don't have an actual outline prepared. I was going to talk about the villains again. So throughout the season, we sort of get this, like, monster slash villain of the episode kind of thing, which I liked. I also enjoyed that we got, like, snippets of these characters again at the very end of the final episode, and that's, like, reminding the viewers, hey, don't forget about these bad guys, they're still around, and two, it's kind of foreshadowing their, future involvements.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like what, like the stuff on Mars has to get resolved somehow.
And then, the lion guy voiced by Michael Dorn, obviously he's super powerful. He's going to be back.
Ridiculously powerful.
Oh my God. Like, he's almost as powerful as the Immortal.
Oh, he's certainly more powerful than the Immortal. He might be able to give Omni-Man a run for his money.
Yeah.
Like,
he's the one who fucked up all of the new Guardians of the Globe.
Yeah, and Invincible all at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, he was just like, oh, I don't want to fight insects. This was boring.
Yeah, and I liked that Michael Dorn played a villain character, because I'm so used to, I've only seen him as...
He voiced a villain in Gargoyles as well, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, right. Okay. I didn't finish watching that, but I only saw him as
Worf.
Worf.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I blanked out, but I like Michael Dorn, and I definitely want more of his character in season two.
Yeah, I don't know. So I did actually read through a Reddit comment sort of what the overall arc for that character is, and I think it's pretty good. I don't know when it all happens, though, so I don't know how much he'll be in season two, but...
Oh, I just thought of something else.
Yes.
This is on the teen side with Mark and his girlfriend, Amber.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Good. That's something I wanted to talk about on a thing I didn't like.
Okay. Let me share what I liked first. I liked that it wasn't a cliche love triangle. Like, this is the cliche love triangle you see in almost every other show. Boy likes girl. Girl doesn't reciprocate because she's either taken or just thinks of him as a friend, which in this case is Mark and Adam Eve. And then so boy moves on to another girl who actually does like him back, so they hook up. So that's Mark and Amber, and they've been dating for a few months, 3-5 months or whatever, by the end of season one. And so, but then they break up, right?
They do. And that's the thing that I didn't like, which at first was sort of fine when the audience was under the impression that Amber did not know that Mark was invincible.
Okay.
So that makes sense. She's like, where did you go? You took off. It seems like a little bit of an overreaction. It's like, well, I mean, one, you should kind of be able to put two and two together that Mark disappeared and Invincible showed up. But all right. But because she says, I know you were a superhero, means she knows why he left, because he became Invincible to save them. And then she breaks up with him because he did that. Now,
so that's what you didn't like.
Yeah, I was like, you can be mad that he's lying, but like, yeah, it didn't feel right. Like the rest of it, like her being upset with him on like always missing out on stuff and
being late to things.
That's completely understandable,
that's,
right?
Yeah,
yeah, that's 100%. Like that's great. What I didn't like was episode 7, Amber, just didn't make sense.
Okay. I was going to say that after they broke up, I liked, because Adam Eve is available. Like, she broke up, she dumped Rexplode, like, early in the season.
Right.
So she's been available this whole time. And, like, as soon as Mark is, you know, available, like, I liked that the writers did not complete the cliche love triangle thing where, oh, I'm available now because Amber dumped me, but, oh, that means I could hook up with Adam Eve now.
Right.
They did not do that, and I'm so glad they didn't do that, because if they did, that would have been something I would not have liked.
Yeah, so he
because didn't... it's nice to have them just be friends. Because
neither one of them at the time seemed to be, like, thinking, I don't know, so... At least in Mark's head, like he thinks that Eve thinks a lot more about Rex than she does. Like she seems to be like, okay, I'm done with Rex. That was whatever, and now I'm gonna do my own thing, and not just because of the thing that happened with Rex, but partly because like she didn't necessarily like, you know, the way. Like, always having to go, oh, well, what's the next thing that I have to fight today, right? Mole people, lizard people, whatever, right?
Yeah, she was done with superhero life.
Yeah. Now, the trigger for that was, or the final, you know, the final straw on the camel's back was the thing with Rex, but it seems like it had probably been building for a while for her. And so when it's her and Mark sitting on that waterfall, he still thinks that she thinks or was doing things because of Rex. And she kind of gets annoyed with him. It's like, that relationship does not define my life, right? Like, I do stuff because I want to do stuff. And so she's certainly at the time not thinking about him as a romantic partner. And he has just been dumped. And so he feels like... like he's thinking about that. He's not thinking about, oh, now I can go out with someone else. He's mm-hmm. thinking, oh, like he's heartbroken, mm-hmm. which is, as it turns out, a change from the comics. In the comics, it was just some probably cliche decision he made, where he decided to dump Amber because it was too dangerous for her or whatever. I liked it. I like the idea better this way, but where it wasn't his decision and he was heartbroken. But the way that it, like, the information that Amber says she had and the justification she used just didn't make any sense. And it sort of doesn't matter by the end of episode 8 because they're back together. But I don't know. I feel like they could have, the writers could have handled it differently and still had them break up. It didn't have to be this like farcical misunderstanding that like, seriously, it would have been insane for her to not be able to put two and two together and be like, oh, Mark disappeared and Invincible showed up and then Invincible flew away and then Mark showed up. Huh.
Oh, man, I just thought of something else. This falls under something I don't like, but it wasn't a huge deal or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And you see this a lot with pretty much any superhero that doesn't have a mask. How do you not put two and two together? They're not wearing a mask. You know what Omni-Man looks like. You know what this man who calls himself Nolan Grayson looks like.
Nolan Grayson not, like, always accosted, like, Omni-Man? He's like, no, I just look like him. Sorry. Like, that would happen all the fucking time because you look exactly like him. Yeah, I know.
You've got the same mustache and the same haircut and hair coloring. And,
right? Like,
you've got the same, like... stature,
same physique and everything. Physique, yeah. Like what? How?
Like, I mean, Adam Eve. Like one person, was it Amber who thought Adam Eve was duplicate?
Yes.
And I'm just like, duplicate has short dark hair. Adam Eve has long red hair.
Yeah, but I think that goes to how not bad. Popular.
Okay.
Like, they just weren't that popular. So, like, there would have only been a few people, like, obsessed with Adam Eve, and maybe none of them were anywhere near that high school. So, like, it's certainly possible. It's like, oh, I guess you do kind of look like one of those people that I kind of am vaguely aware of that exists.
I thought you were going to say, well, you know, humans also have distorted memories over time.
I mean, they do. But yeah, so it's, but I think the point was that they just weren't that popular. But like Omni-Man, insanely popular. How do people not recognize him and Nolan Grayson to be the same person? Especially since he writes like travel books and stuff. And so like his author picture would be on the back of his books and stuff. And people would be like, this dude looks exactly like Omni-Man.
Wait. Nolan wrote travel books?
Yeah.
In the comics?
No, in the show. They
How did I miss this?
They talked about it a little bit, especially at the end where Cecil was telling...
Debbie about his about Nolan's quote-unquote death.
Yeah. She's like, and so his books always sold well, but, you know, since his death, they're going to sell really well now. So you guys will be taken care of for money.
I forgot.
Yeah.
And I must have just... That blew over me. Yeah, but... Oh.
So, yeah. It's very strange that he was not discovered.
And I'm trying to think who else would have been easy to identify.
The Immortal, for sure.
Immortal.
He doesn't wear a mask.
War Woman had the helmet.
Yeah. And changed her hairstyle and stuff. And, you know, sometimes that's enough for people to be like, huh, that looks, you look different.
But Mark and Invincible, like, clearly the same physique.
Same physique, but he is at least wearing a mask.
But, like, you know, in those really heavy fights, you know, his eye thing.
Yeah, his goggles get
his shattered. Goggles get shattered, so then, like, you can see part of his face.
Yeah, but I don't think anyone was taking pictures and shit at the time, so...
Well, some of the stuff was, like, covered on the news.
Yeah.
Like, like at the very end with Chicago.
Yeah. You know, that was... So, that was interesting, sort of in episode two when Mark's getting his training and he's fighting these guys and he's knocking them through buildings and stuff. And Omni-Man's like, you've caused a lot more damage than was necessary. I was like, yeah, you sure did. Because it's going to take years to repair the stuff that, like, you just caused in seconds. Like, you've done a lot of structural damage to some of these buildings.
Not just buildings, the subway system.
Well, that was their fight between the two of them.
Oh, right. That's what I was talking about.
Yeah, I was talking about their fight or not their fight, but
when Mark was trying to fight off the alien.
No, fighting like Titan and some other guys in episode two.
The Titan was like episode four.
Well, so the first time that he meets the Titan, the Titan is helping some guys rob a bank, and that's episode two.
Oh.
And Mark doesn't have his costume yet or anything.
Okay.
But speaking of the damage being caused, I loved the thing that they did with the corner of the building when Mark tackled someone through a corner of a building. I'm like, that building's going to start falling down. You shouldn't have done that. And then it does start falling down. I'm like, yeah, very good, guys. Very good.
Yeah.
That whole building's fucked.
Yeah, you took out a corner of a rectangular building. One leg is gone, essentially.
Yeah, it's like you just took out the corner of a building and for like to capture one person. That was very bad. Very bad. The only people that have done a worse job is Miami Police Department recovering diamonds.
Oh, man.
I think they killed like 5 people trying to recover diamonds. Innocent people, as well as the robbers.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That was devastating. Oh, my God.
So, I actually did like that they brought in that kind of stuff. Like, you know, they're doing damage to these buildings and it's going to take a long time. And that was actually something they mentioned in the last episode, talking about how long it would take to repair the damage caused by the fight between, well, not, it wasn't a fight, the slaughter of Invincible by Omni-Man. God.
Yeah, no, weeks and weeks, months, just to clear out the debris.
Just to clear out the debris, let alone, like, start construction on fixing the buildings and shit. Good God.
Yeah. Well, like, construction will even start, because they have to figure out how to fix it before they fix it.
It's a mess.
Yeah.
You know, that's something that's normally glossed over. And
billions of dollars going into infrastructure rebuilding. Yeah. Oh, my God.
You know, they kind of touched on it, I think, in, in Avengers 2, like the amount of collateral damage the Avengers caused or whatever. But it's normally something that is not talked about.
I know, right? And I'm glad it was brought up here in some capacity.
Because that, like, it takes a long time to erect those buildings, and it doesn't take very long to knock them down. And then once they're knocked down, it's going to take just as long to put them back up.
Yeah. Let's see. What else did I... Was there anything else you did not like that you want to mention?
Minor thing. Just, and this is true for essentially all comics and comic book things. Some physics things, specifically around speed, like throwing the baseball around the planet, like that would have taken some real finesse to make sure you throw it exactly the speed that it needs to like travel forward without falling down. And then ending up at the moon in like less than a second means you're traveling at the speed of light. And if you can travel at the speed of light, lots of other things like break in physics, because you are matter. And so if you're running into things at the speed of light, you are essentially going to cause nuclear explosions every time you hit a particle. So if you can go that fast in the Earth's atmosphere, you're just leaving behind a gigantic nuclear explosion because of all the air particles you're crashing into at the speed of light.
Physics.
You know, in the DC comics, they, you know, kind of hand wave that away for the Flash by saying he uses the speed force, which is able to like he's able to force stuff away from him, so that's how he's not causing this. But and sort of at first when they said that the mission to Mars was just going to be a couple of weeks, I was like, no, you know, under current technology it'd take, you know, a year to get there and then a year to get back. It's not a 2-week mission. But then, you know, they have technology that's more advanced than what we have here today in our universe. So I looked it up, and if you were able to accelerate at a constant 1G the entire way or halfway there and then decelerate at 1G the other half of the way, it would take you slightly less than 2 days to get there. So I was like, well, okay, I guess if you have the technology to accelerate fast enough to produce artificial Earth gravity, which I guess isn't a stretch based on the technology that they have, you would be able to get there in a couple of days and come back in a couple of days. And I guess theoretically, if you were going to spend, you know, a week on the planet or whatever, that's about a 2-week mission, I suppose. But otherwise, yeah, and just the detecting of objects out in deep space that are the size of a human approaching the Earth, like, that's, I feel like that was a bit of a stretch. Like, that's nearly impossible. Space is empty as fuck, and picking up something that small is impossible. But other than that, like, and, like, that's a minor thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, other than that, like, I felt the show did a pretty good job of,
which is why we're recommending
everything. It. Yeah, I feel like it's a really good show, and, you know, I don't want to beat up on it too much, but
so I don't have anything else that I don't think I don't have anything else to complain about or anything, but let's take a quick moment and talk about Damian Darkblood.
Poor guy.
So, okay,
poor guy.
So
just trying to do the right thing.
He's like he looks like Hellboy, but he's a reptile.
And he's acting, well, he's a demon.
Well, no, his physique,
I suppose,
is like a reptile. Yeah, he's a demon, but he's on the side of Cecil. He's like trying to figure out this murder, and
well, he's only trying to figure out the, so he's not really on the side of Cecil, which is why Cecil banishes him back to hell. Like, he's just trying to figure out the murder because doing good things keeps him out of hell.
Oh, that's true. But so what was his power exactly, from what I understood, because I've only watched the show once and you've watched it twice. Mm-hmm. Now Damian Darkblood, his power had something to do with cold ice?
Oh, okay. No. So just by just his presence and artifacts that are related to him created a cold aura around him. But his actual powers were sort of magically based, in that he could sort of determine the origin of something magically. Which is
why he's a detective.
Right. Which is so sort of how he was solving this crime here. He's like, well, you know, I've searched everything around here, and I can tell you that the only people that were here were the six Guardians of the Globe and Omni-Man. They didn't fight anyone else. So somebody attacked somebody here, and only one came out on top.
But you don't need magic to figure that out.
No, you don't. He used it. That's how he figured it out. But obviously Cecil already knew. Because yeah. That's why he was like, don't you ever fucking say that. Because I don't want anyone else to hear it. Because I can't have it get back to Omni-Man that we know that he did this. He needs to think. And, you know, Cecil was successful at this. He's like, he needs to think that we don't know that it was him.
And getting rid of, banishing Damian Darkblood back to hell was one way to keep the secret shut.
Right.
Yeah.
Because he could make sure that Damian Darkblood didn't tell anyone else, and he could pretend that they had Damian Darkblood and they thought that it was Damian Darkblood that had done the deed. Like Omni-Man uh-huh. had tried to persuade them. He was like, Damian Darkblood did it. And they're like, oh, right, yeah, Damian Darkblood. Mm-hmm. Yep, sure did. We'll look into it. We'll capture him and find out.
Yeah, and I liked how they banished him, because Damian Darkblood's like, you need a specific spell to banish me back to hell, and you don't have that, because the book that had that spell is long gone. And Cecil's like, oh, you're forgetting how much good technology we have.
Yeah. I
like that scene.
I kind of don't believe the AI putting, I mean, based on the amount of text that was missing, I was like, I don't believe an AI could put that back together. That's not how that works. But I'm going to let it slide because it's cool sounding.
Oh, yeah. That was all I wanted.
I loved the reaction. Like, relax. We didn't just kill him. We just sent him back to hell. And is it Art? Was that his assistant's name?
I don't remember.
I think it was. And if that's the case, Art was played by Mark Hamill. But he was like, I think that isn't that worse. I'm like, yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. Like, he's doing all this stuff to stay out of hell. He would rather be dead.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. What if they need Damien Darkblood for any reason, and they end up needing to bring him back?
They could probably resummon him. But I don't know. I doubt that would be the case. I
feel like maybe not in season 2, but they could need him for something in season 3.
Maybe. I was like, you'd have to I don't think next season is going to be a mystery trope. I think it's going to be more of like...
They're going to focus on Viltrum for sure.
You're going to be learning more about the sides of the Coalition and mm-hmm. Viltrum. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Was there anyone else who I wanted to touch on? I know we're wrapping up on the hour. Okay, I got it. The Taylor guy. I forgot his name, but for the longest time, he thought Omni-Man was his friend.
Right.
And
I mean, everyone did, right?
Yeah, and Debbie also thought that too, and like she, like they all felt like shit. Because they've just been tricked their entire adult lives. But I liked the Taylor because he made the coolest outfits, the coolest superhero costumes, and he also was very good at playing detective in terms of figuring out the bloodstains on Omni-Van's costume. And also, if you're trying to hide the fact that you killed six superheroes, why the fuck would you keep your costume?
She asked him that, remember? And he's like, I guess part of me kind of wanted to be caught.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, now I remember. But I still think that was dumb.
Yeah, well, I also, like, when he talked about, like, the age of the blood, I'm like, well, but all the blood would be, like, based on how long it's been, right? It's been 5 months since this happened.
Oh, you're saying the way the Taylor figured it out doesn't make sense?
Yeah, the blood from the Red Rush being minutes older than any of the other blood won't make a difference because like it's been 5 months. If that had been the case if he had looked at it like shortly after the fight, yeah, sure, there would have been like stuff that was seconds old and stuff that was minutes old. But, you know, when it's all 5 months and some change old, like it's all going to look the same.
So you're calling shenanigans on the Taylor's figuring out.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I liked it. And I liked how he ended with the blood on his glove or something, Omni-Man's glove. Mm-hmm. I was like, the oldest blood splatter is right here. Nolan threw the first punch. And Debbie's like, why? I don't know. I liked that scene.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Taylor's not in it a whole lot. So, you know, throwing a bone here, he was a good character. But yeah, that is Invincible. That wraps up our discussion on season 1, and I cannot wait until season 2.
Yeah.
And since it's an animated show, like, I guess...
It's going to be like a year, year and a half.
Hopefully a year.
We'll see.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends on funding and stuff. But I'm used to, you know, things like Rick and Morty or Venture Brothers, where it's like a year and a half, 2 years between seasons.
Yeah. But yeah, until next time, guys. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Bingeables podcast.
Leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you enjoy listening to our podcast, please consider giving us your support on Patreon for as little as $1 a month. Just visit us on patreon.com/bingeablespod. That's patreon.com/BINGEABLESPOD.
You can connect with us on Twitter at BingeablesPod, or you can email us at BingeablesPod@gmail.com.
Until next time. And the music you're listening to is Shaving Mirror by Kevin MacLeod.